Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to episode 48 of the Comic Pod. We are here to talk about Batman Begins. If this pod is strange at any given moment and we start either speed talking or getting very weird senses of deja vu, it's because we did record this 2 weeks ago and it failed. So we lost a perfectly good, if not great, podcast. So it might be a little bit strange for us, but we're hoping we can repeat the fine things we said about this film. It's just me and Stu tonight. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. I didn't actually realise it had been 2 friggin' weeks.
I think so. I know my calendar based on my illnesses at the minute, which is a really sad fucking thing to say, but I was just laid up with tonsillitis last week, so I couldn't talk last week.
That would have been interesting.
Yeah, it would have just been you talking and me eating soup and making, you know, grunting noises, perhaps the odd cough, maybe. It wouldn't have been
really
particularly effective.
Specific porn.
Well, it's quite hard.
You do say there's porn out there for pretty much everything. You never know. Maybe this is how we make our millions. This is how we make our Comic-Con money.
Is this what it is? Is it basically pimping me out as some kind of weird medical.
Medical porn, yeah, could go for that.
Yeah,
it's like AR, but without the budget.
It certainly doesn't have the budget. No, we certainly have no budget.
Otherwise,
I think we spent it up, haven't we?
The call recorder going.
Yeah, the call recorder going. Your growing comic book collection, and my children essentially kill our budget for, you know. I think Lego sets are my potential downfall soon. There's a new Batman Lego set which is just ridiculously cool.
Are you not buying the Millennium Falcon one that costs like 700 quid?
I don't have the budget for a 7,000 piece Millennium Falcon as much as I'd love to. It's absolutely massive. Yeah, I'd have to sell one, or at least a part of one, maybe.
Maybe a kidney.
Yeah, I could probably lose a kidney. I don't think I've got much longer to live anyway, the way I'm going.
No, the way you're going to die of tonsillitis.
Yeah, I'm the first man to die.
It might be the first recorded since at least the Victorian times, when their idea of fixing things was pretty much cut it off.
Yeah, exactly.
And we can't cut your head off, because otherwise it's just going to be me talking, and literally nobody wants that, including me.
Yeah, I don't think anyone wants that. No, it's not something. Imagine a solo podcast on this channel. It'd just be ridiculous. I wasn't going to do any news, but I'm kind of, there's been quite a lot. We did this 2 weeks ago, but obviously things have changed somewhat. There is a few cool things coming out, because it's kind of the year again. So Walking Dead is ramping up towards its return. Not many people are that arsed, it would seem. I think people are a little bit over.
It's kind of fallen away, hasn't it? I think it's been overshadowed massively this time by Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I think Game of Thrones has just kicked everyone's ass now, and all everyone cares about is when Game of Thrones is coming back.
Well,
what's happening with directors and production and anything else.
Which segues nicely to what I was saying before to our little Game of Thrones group. For anyone that's not seen it, they've announced, I know this isn't comic related, but fuck
off. Who cares? Fuck off.
They've announced that season 8, they start actual production in about 2 weeks. 6 episodes. The budget per episode is $15 million.
which for TV is just astonishing.
It's crazy. For something that short, and they've pulled back all of the big directors. The first guy they did, I'm not going to remember any names.
Battle of the Bastards.
Yeah, he did Hard Home, Battle of the Bastards, and one other big set piece.
I don't know his director. He's clearly the big action piece director. Yeah. So the war fighting, you know, that kind
and
of thing.
And then the other guy was the one that was responsible for pretty much every single grain of detail and the direction of the Red Wedding. So the first guy that did Hard Home, he's getting 2. So he's getting a third of the season. Then the Red Wedding guy's getting at least 1. So that's already half the season's directors accounted for.
Yeah, and they're clearly big hitters. So it's not going to be... I mean, they'll be heavy on narrative because it's Game of Thrones, but I think you're expecting... I'd say two giant episodes of action, I would imagine, in this.
And they did actually confirm as well, for anyone that hadn't heard, the reason that the direwolves weren't in the last season was down to budget. It was either wolves or dragons, and the dragons were obviously integral to the story, so they couldn't get away from it. So they had absolutely zero choice, whereas now, I think last season was around $12 million an episode, so they're throwing an extra few million an episode. That's potentially the difference between direwolves and no direwolves.
I'm sure.
That could be, you know, one dragon in the sky at a time compared to maybe 2 or 3.
It's just going to be significant. I think what Game of Thrones likes to do, obviously it plays a lot with CG, but I think they'd like to throw a lot of extras in terms of the horses and the number of extras and things
that's
like
what
that.
The video
you've got to
watching.
Consider armor, you've got to consider... all of the elements that come across with that and all of the weaponry and all of the, I don't know,
there's a brilliant behind-the-scenes video of the Battle of the Bastards, and that's what it is, those two things you just mentioned. It's the extras and the horses.
I remember seeing 2,000 extras on that and 2,000 horses or something.
And then all the CG, because they have to turn 2,000 into 20,000. So.
Well, exactly. Yeah, exactly. But the more they can do, which seems in the more realistic element of things, the better for them. So that's going to be big. It's going to be huge next year.
DC TV's pretty much about to kick off. Is it next week or week after, something like
that? Yeah, that's coming soon. Really soon, and I'm not sure. Yeah, the other bit, Patty Jenkins officially confirmed for Wonder Woman 2.
Yeah.
She's getting $8 million, which is the largest sum of money ever given to a female director.
So
pretty groundbreaking stuff, really, and good for her, because
absolutely,
it's about time in the industry that. I think she's one of the first females to direct a sequel as well, that, you know, did the original.
Really? See, doesn't that just sound really pathetic? Something as...
I know, I wish I didn't have to say things like that, do you know what I mean? It's quite a male-dominated industry, clearly.
Of course it is. It's like 90-something percent of it is just dicks.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's just... I think it's positive, because obviously they did such a great job on the first film.
And it's the continuity side, isn't it? She's got a vision, like we say with like the Russo brothers and stuff. She's got a vision of what she wants to do, presumably over 2, 3, 4, 5, however many movies she thinks she's going to get. So just being able to say to her, right, that's part one done. How do you move it on? What happens next?
I think it leads quite well into Nolan, actually, if we're going to segue. That was the smoothest segue I've done in a while. But Nolan being, you know, talking about continuity, we're talking about the original of the Batman trilogy. So, you know, if we're hoping that films like, I don't know, the next Marvel releases, you know, the trilogy from James Gunn on Guardians and Wonder Woman trilogy, that's going to, you know, we want, I think everyone wants that continuity. And sometimes it's nice to have a new director come in, because I think we'll see that with Ragnarok.
But
a new director with a completely different spin you know, although Ragnarok as well, you know, the previous two Thor films have been directed by different people anyway.
That, the problem with the Thor films, as we well know, is that because they weren't very good, it makes it a lot easier to replace the directors because the bar has been set so mind-numbingly low.
You scrap it and go, this didn't work, let's try again. And I think the Thor films, as a general rule, don't really fit within the MCU. I think, not in the same way.
They haven't had really much continuity storyline anyway. The only continuity has been really the people, hasn't it? Like Jane Foster. Yeah. I mean, it's not like the storyline. Like Guardians had threads.
Well, Guardians is almost a straight follow-on. You know, it's just after the one finished.
It's about six months after it, isn't it? Whereas Thor was...
I think it's less than that.
Just an indeterminate amount of time later with pretty much no continuity other than the Earth-based characters. But then what they were being used for was so different. It's just... Yeah, like you say, it's easy to just rip the bandage off and go, right, didn't work, let's try and make it work. That didn't work, let's try and make it work again. And now it at least looks like they've got the basics of a bloody good Thor film, and there's a hell of a lot of positive feeling out there about it.
Yeah, it's somewhat being overshadowed. So the sequel to Blade Runner coming out in the next week, I think, in the UK.
Really?
Thursday.
I had no idea when it was out.
Yeah, so that's getting a lot of the mega press, and it's understandable. It's a big release.
What is it, 30-something years between?
35 years now, I think. Yeah.
And that's got the continuity because one of the main characters is back in it, isn't he?
Well, it does. And I mean, I'm a huge fan of the original. I'm doing a podcast about it, which is something we should do at the end, but fuck it. I'm doing a podcast recording tomorrow night with Joe Simpson and Trev Downey on the original Blade Runner on the movie night. So
I watched it a couple of months ago, and it's just... It still makes me head hurt, but...
It has those moments, but I think for a film that was made in 1982, the visuals are just mind-blowing.
Oh, it's not dated at all.
I can't get my head around that. I honestly can't let a film made that's older than me, same age as you, give or take, is that visually impressive. You know,
it's better than me.
Yeah, it certainly dates better than me.
I'm in much worse condition than Blade Runner.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. So at the minute, the UK press is all hot on, you know, and the International Press Collider and everyone kind of doing their buzz around Blade Runner. So I think you'll get Ragnarok buzz in the next couple of weeks. I'm sure the pre-screenings will happen and everyone will be quite excited.
Ooh, you just mentioned the key word, pre-screenings. There were actually some advanced screenings of Justice League.
Was there really already?
Yes. And
when's Justice League out? Mid-November?
Yeah, I think it's second. I've got like the 11th.
Are they trying to get early screenings in to re-change the film again?
I think what they're doing is to try and stem the tide of negative press that they get. And I must admit, you've obviously got to take these things with a pinch of salt because you don't know who's a real fan and who's a...
No, yeah, there
employee.
Is a bit of that, yeah.
But it's been a very, very positive response. Some of the things I've read, and this one did sound like a plant... Somebody saying, oh, I absolutely hated Batman versus Superman, but this was brilliant. This was this, that, and the other. It sounds way too, like, perfect.
Yeah.
Either that or someone's gone, that was really good, and they've gone, well, would you mind reading this out instead? And you go, oh, okay.
I've said to you before, and we've discussed this before, I do find it quite astonishing that I've watched the two main trailers, and one of them, I don't know which film I was watching at the cinema, but it was on at the IMAX, and it was before the film, and I loved it. I thought, this looks amazing in the IMAX, and it looks great. And then the extended trailer really pissed me off because I just found too much wrong with it. And I know sometimes you go looking for this, and we've had this argument, so it's not going to happen. But it is difficult with that film because I do think it is going to split opinions down the middle. I don't think people are going to... I think some people are already pre-judgment, and I think I've got that, because Zack Snyder just does that to me. I can't help it.
And you won't be the only one who's going in already going, well, this is going to be a 5 out of 10. And then it's hard because if it isn't an absolute monumental blockbuster, people come out disappointed.
Well, actually, if you look back to Batman vs Superman, I came out more positive than I expected to.
Yeah, but that's because you literally expected it to just be for 2 hours, literally a massive shit on
I expected it to be the Emoji Movie. My levels of expectation were like the 10 out of, you know, the 10%, you know, the 1 out of 10 kind of Emoji Movie levels. And I came out going, actually, that's probably a 6 or a 7, and that surprised me. But then actually, subsequently, everyone else just keeps bashing it, and it just keeps knocking my feelings towards it, because no one ever points out the good elements of that film. And it's the same anytime you look back at any of these films, you know, the Superman film that was released a few years ago, even if it's good up until that ending just kills any hope, doesn't it?
Man of Steel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's difficult. It's difficult. But, you know, there is, I'm hoping they get it right, and I'm hoping it's not as, I think 2 or 3 will shine in it, particularly Wonder Woman. I'm just, you know, I want to see everyone's heart in it. That's the major thing, isn't it? You really want to see everyone pulling in the right direction and not just there for the paychecks a little bit, because sometimes these films lean in that direction. I think that's about everything, unless there's anything else you want to wrap on the news front. It's good times at the minute. It's about to get good again, which is what we need in this realm of things, because generally these things cheer me and you up. No end, because there's some good TV and good films, and Punisher rumored to be mid-October as well, actually.
Yeah, they're still being really sketchy on the date.
It's really strange with that, actually, because they've normally been very forthcoming about dates, but I think it's their marketing approach on this one is a little bit different. I wrote a tweet about I'm hoping it'll be Redemption for the Defenders, because that's really not gone down very well. And some people are like, oh, well, Netflix don't care. I'm like, yeah, but they do care, because ultimately ratings and their independence and what they produce themselves is what makes them more money. It's what grows them as a product, and you know,
it's what guarantees them their next show.
Exactly.
Every time you have a good show, you strengthen your position at the bargaining table, don't you? If you have a bit of a stinker, as soon as you go up to sort of negotiate the next one, which is going to be, what, Jessica Jones?
Well, Jessica Jones is already happening. Daredevil,
whatever it is, it makes it a little bit harder, because they go, well, we gave you, you know, X million for the Defenders and it wasn't that good, so we're going to have to claw a few million back off you. And
everything you read about the Defenders, you know, it was just rushed, because they were trying to film it between schedules of getting it done so they could do Jessica Jones, and getting it done so they could do, you know, next Daredevil or whatever it was, Luke Cage,
and like you said, they shot it before Iron Fist as well, so it was all out of sequence, which
I know happen. it felt too rushed, because we said it was just too short, it needed 2 extra episodes when we discussed it at the time, and hopefully I think this will be a big release for them. Punisher feels like, I think they're more comfortable for me when they're in a kind of, not origin, but they're in that early development of a character kind of arc. It feels like that's where they know where to take it.
And it's easier to do with him, because he's a human. He's got no abilities to explain it. It's going to be
He's got a lot of guns and a lot of anger.
No mystic stuff. So there's going to be a lot less CG in it. There's going to be a hell of a lot more stunt work.
I think we need a lot less CG as well.
A lot more hand-to-hand fighting as well. And it looks like a lot of it centres around his time in the army. He was doing Black Ops and, you know,
you give Bernthal the script, he'll bring all the raw energy, he'll bring all the intensity, he'll bring all the emotion. You just give him the lines to deliver, do you know what I mean? And then give him the violence on top of that, and you're in for a cracking show no matter what, really. So yeah, I think it'll be a massive success for them. I'll be looking forward to reviewing that when it comes out in the not so distant future, I hope. So why we're really here is to talk about Batman Begins. Like I said early in the pod, this might be a little bit strange for us, because we've had plans to do with this.
We've already practiced our lines
a couple of times. We basically done a whole run through on this. We both adore this film. We speak very highly of it.
Sadly, not a lot of people tend to agree.
Yeah, I think when we talked about this before, this is what the conclusion we came to, is that it gets some nice praise. It gets some, oh, that was good and this element was good, but it doesn't get the praise that it deserves for being such a complete film, really.
Yeah, especially when we mentioned, I think we've mentioned on possibly maybe on a Batman pod in the past, that everyone knows the first like 10% of Batman's origin story. Watching the film, comes out, parents get shot, wah, turns back up at what, 25?
Something bats, like lots of scary bats at one stage or another, falling down a well or something.
He comes back at 25. Well, where the fuck's he been? How can he fight like that? Where did he get the ideas? Where did he get the gadgets from? Blah, blah, blah. And the best thing about this is it goes through and it fills in all of those gaps, so you can now fill in the blanks of the day that his parents get shot to the first night he goes out in Gotham and actually takes up the mantle of the Batman, which is covered brilliantly on a little side note in Batman Year One, both the comic and they made an animated film of it about 5 years ago or something. So if anyone wants to see that, it depicts basically Batman's first night and how terrible it goes and then how he adapts his game and what have you. But this just does a brilliant way of... it goes a really long way of filling all those gaps in. Because a lot of people don't know
that. It doesn't take any half measures, you know. That's the thing about it. It's, I mean, conclusion is that it is an incredible origin story.
It is. It's to me, it's a perfect telling of Batman's origin because it does do the beginning bit. It does do the parents dying, but then it does arguably the more important stuff because you get, you know, the fuse is lit, isn't it, when his parents die, but there's a hell of a lot of
psychological elements of it that you get that from Bale and you get that from Neeson in all the sections when they're in the, you know, Tibetan monasteries or, you know, in that and in prison out there and those kind of things. You see a side of Bruce that no one's ever seen before. Nope. and you see that kind of, I don't know, real telling of what in the eyes of the comic book writer and what would have happened. Do you know what I mean? It's a much grittier story. It's a much more real story than I think everyone was used to. We, you know, when we previously spoke about this, I think that the big thing for us is obviously all the fight scenes in those elements and all that scenery and background and incredible cinematography that they bring to it. But it's all done with a sense of realism. So this film is 12 years old and it doesn't feel a day old. Do you know what I mean? You don't look at the CG in these films and Spider-Man, the early Spider-Mans, look insanely outdated now.
They're so rubbery, aren't they? The animation's not human. There's no way a person with a skeleton could move the way Spider-Man does. But that's one thing that we like about Batman, isn't it? Because it's not dependent on CG. It's dependent on choreography. And the choreography in the fight scenes, of which there are many, are brilliant. And that's what we like. We like comic films that are like action films. And we like good fights. You know, it's nice to have CG with people flying around and using powers, but at the end of the day, you just want to see two people wailing on each other.
Yeah, I read earlier in the year that obviously there was a big talk about, and this little bit of a side note, but a bit of talk about Nolan directing a Bond film.
Okay.
It's not going to happen because I don't think they'd ever give him full license to do it in his, you know, he's a guy that directs, he writes, he produces, he does the full
production.
He pretty
much does everything bar the costumes, doesn't he?
Yeah, he probably does. He's probably got a sewer. He's got a sewing machine at home and he's there 24 hours a day.
No, you're not doing it right. Let me fucking do it. He's there sewing.
He's a bit of a control freak by all accounts. And from my perspective, he would have made an incredible Bond film because it would have been really gritty and really real and really dark. But a lot of people said, well, he's already made that. And I was like, well, not really. And they're saying, well, look at his Batman trilogy, because although it's in the guise of Batman, he's still telling the story like it's a Bond film. Do you know what I mean? And I kind of looked at it a different light and went, yeah, I kind of don't agree entirely, but I can see exactly where people are coming from with that, because these films are not just your typical comic book film. And I mean, all the films we tend to talk about, I think we tend to choose films that aren't your atypical popcorn film. Do you know what I mean? I think most of these films have advanced beyond that. Some of them are lighthearted and you can just go and have a great time, and you know, that's what Guardians is. It's good escapism and Ant-Man and things like that. But when they're really real, when they, you know, the action's real, the way they're shot, and it's all reliant on the script and the actors, that's when it elevates the film above just it being on a label of a comic book film or an action film. It's just, it's a great film. And I think what Nolan films deliver, maybe bar the third one, because there's a lot of criticism around that, which I think is harsh, but I think we said we might come back and discuss. We've done The Dark Knight, obviously. It's why we eventually made this pod, because we discussed The Dark Knight probably 2 years ago now, on the movie night with Joe Simpson.
It was round sort of September, October.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah, okay. Yeah. So that's probably 2 years ago now, and it was the main inspiration for why we do this podcast. So
you've got him to blame.
Yeah, exactly. So anyone listening, if they want to blame anyone, it's not hashtag blame Marco, it's blame Joe Simpson today. Because we basically went, oh, this is fun, let's do this again, and then started it all from here, really. And the reason we talked about The Dark Knight such passionately and strongly at the time is because we just loved it, man. It's such an incredible film. And The Dark Knight Rises doesn't get that kind of praise, you know, and it's got some
which
great elements to it.
Which I think is mad. I can't believe it doesn't get the same level of praise. I think
Dark Knight is elevated above in terms of the Joker and Heath Ledger's performance.
Yeah.
And it's a great film. It is an incredible film because it feels like this is the origin story. That is the body of work. Do you know what I mean? That's the great middle of the work. And then the final is like the conclusion to it all. I just think people are just a little bit hung up on a few elements. I think some people are a little bit hurt that it's never really gone on anywhere. And I think that's the key thing, because everyone wanted Nolan to basically go, screw it, I'm not going to do anything other than Batman. But then, you know, when the guy's working on Dunkirk and Inception and Interstellar and everything else, you're not going to get a director who's not ambitious and wants to go on and do other things. And I think Bale's the same as an actor. But in these three films, they gave absolutely everything, really. And it deserves, I think they all deserve an infinite amount of praise, really. And especially this film, because it's almost the most complete of the three. And that's quite a bold thing to say, but I think it is.
No, I think that's a fair comment, yeah. The one thing that a lot of people might have been surprised about was the villain choice. Going straight in with Ra's al Ghul and the League of Assassins, or the fucking League of Shadows, as they call it, which really pisses me off.
I was going to call it the League of Gentlemen then, but
that would have been very strange.
That is like Nolan meets the Mighty Boosh. It would be quite an entertaining.
Yeah, Liam Neeson leading the League of Gentlemen against Christian Bale's Batman, directed by Kevin Nolan. Sorry, Christopher Nolan, not Kevin Nolan. That would be fucking weird. That would be, okay, I want to watch that film now.
Oh, yeah.
Let's make some calls and make it happen.
That sounds incredible. Let's make that happen.
Right, okay. Well, there's my retirement fund sorted.
That is, you're made. That one idea, that accidental Freudian slip, and you've basically made your career.
That's my nest egg sorted. But, yeah, going for Ra's al Ghul probably seemed a bit weird. It would have been safer to go, right, Batman film, let's get the Joker in.
Yeah.
Or let's get the Riddler or the Penguin or Two-Face, people that we've seen done before, sometimes done really well, like Catwoman, sometimes done okay. Like, I mean,
putting Penguin in that category, or are you putting him a little bit above?
Penguin was very,
Walken,
very good.
Christopher Walken did Two-Face, didn't he, back in the day? Did he do Two-Face, or was he someone else?
No, Tommy Lee Jones.
Was it Tommy Lee Jones?
Yeah. He was Two-Face. Christopher Walken played the...
He
was the mayor.
Oh, he was, wasn't he?
He was just
That's
some
a
nobody. But they took a bit of a gamble by going for a pretty unknown villain. But anyone that's read the comics will be a huge fan of Ra's al Ghul, because he's never the guy that holds the dagger, but he's the guy that sent the guy that's holding the dagger.
You know, he's a smart, manipulative kind of character. You know, and ultimately he's the mentor in all of this, because he's trying to form Bruce into not the Batman, basically.
Well, he wants him to be, in the comics, he wants him to be his successor. It's not something that they really talked about. They didn't go into the Lazarus Pit and how Ra's is about 600 years old, which was good, because that made them able to keep it more of an action film rather than going really comic-y about it.
Yeah, I think it would have been a strange choice to go into replenishing
I think if they pushed back on him and said, whoa, what are you doing? Where's the Lazarus Pit? I think that would have been a big sticking point for him, and could have seen him walk away, because I don't think he would have wanted to be.
Well, he wrote it, didn't he? You know, he wrote it. So ultimately they signed off on what they thought was a better, more accessible, you know, because we do, and it's interesting because we talk about this quite a lot now, that the series that are quite hard-hitting and quite, you know, so the Marvel Netflix stuff and elements of the Arrow and stuff, when they lose people is when they go a little bit too far in either the comic realm
when they go too far away from the comics. They've got to have that middle
ground. You've got to have the balance.
Where it's comic-y enough to be faithful, but not comic-y, not too comic-y that you lose the people who don't have
the
time or money.
And this film has all the kind of traits. So it's got the great Batmobile. Do you know what I mean? It's got the great armor.
Oh, the fucking tumbler.
Oh, the tumbler's incredible. It is incredible. It's just so, I don't know. I won't ever see a Batmobile in the same vision again. Do you know what I mean?
Well, a lot of the other Batmobiles were quite flashy, and they looked more like sort of armored sports cars. This is just a tank.
It essentially is a tank. It's a more mobile tank that can just suit, you know, that kind of grittier, darker, edgier Batman. And I know the realms we're moving into with that kind of no holds barred Batfleck approach to things is quite dark, and that's what they're trying to hit for now. But it was a dark Batman. Do you know what I mean? The telling of it, the reality of it, it wasn't a film that really pulled any punches. You know, it's not all about, it's not gratuitous violence, it's not, you know, that kind of stuff. But the fear elements in this film are what kind of stood it apart. So obviously we talked about Ra's, but you've also got Scarecrow,
who was done brilliantly by Cillian Murphy.
Cillian Murphy is a Nolan favourite, along with, and I think we'll talk about Alfred, Michael Caine in a little while, but he likes to cast him quite a lot. And you can see why, because every time, you know, Nolan gets to work with him, he just brings out the best in him. And he's got that kind of, again, a little bit like Liam Neeson, he's got that kind of double edge to him. You know, he can play the kind of innocent role, but secretly he's a dirty schemer, and you can feel what he's doing. And he's just menacing at times. And I think as the Scarecrow, it's a pretty nondescript, you know, as a villain goes, Scarecrow wouldn't be, again, one that you would automatically think of.
No.
But this film is more about what's going on in your head rather than the power of the enemy. Do you know what I mean? So it's a psychological battle that
and certainly
Bruce
what's
has got
going
to
on
overcome.
In Bruce's head.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about Bruce overcoming fears, and the Scarecrow with the hallucinogenic and everything else. It's all about the fear factor, and they bring that background so well in this film.
And he was used quite sparingly, which was good, because he's an over-the-top character. And he's one of those that you could overpower the character and say, right, well, you know, he's made this toxin that's, you know, it can't be cured or something, or, you know, it makes people so afraid that they die. But they didn't. They made it realistic to the point where Batman's so afraid, you know, it knocks him into a coma for two whole days and stuff like that. And it shows Batman's vulnerability, but then it shows his strength of will to overcome it. And then it gives him a bit of a hint of, it shows his ingenuity, and it shows his reliance on the supporting cast with people like Lucius Fox to get it manufactured, and then his compassion to get the cure out there to Rachel and to Commissioner Gordon. And Scarecrow was a very, very inspired choice of character. Very inspired. But he wouldn't be in my top 10 Batman villains.
If you were to say to me, name your
favourites, he wouldn't be in there. But that's not to say he's not a good villain. He was a good villain for this. This film wouldn't have suited Penguin because Penguin wouldn't have worked. He wouldn't have dovetailed so well alongside a control freak like Ralph.
I think you look at Nolan as well, and I think he would always work with the villains that are a little bit more
little bit left field, aren't they?
Yeah, a little bit left field, but a little bit less comic book or cartoony element. Do you know what I mean? And I know Batman's not heavy on that. You know, you look at Spider-Man for more of those kind of villains at times. But if you took a Mr. Freeze or a Riddler or a Penguin, I just can't quite see that in a Nolan film.
He's gone away from the camp ones, hasn't he?
Yeah, really? I think he could have done a Riddler extremely well if he cast the right one.
Yeah,
you couldn't do that in the third film, having done the Joker in the second film.
No, because they are quite similar in terms.
They've got similarities in their approach to things. You know, not entirely, but you couldn't quite see that.
It would be a little bit like the criticism of the Flash show, wouldn't it? Where they had three speeds to villains.
Oh, Jesus. They've got to change it up eventually. Yeah.
So, yeah. And ironically enough, there's actually been a really good arc in the comics that's going on at the minute of, it's called The War of Jokes and Riddles, and it's Joker versus Riddler in a roundabout way, which has been really good.
That sounds good.
But yeah, Scarecrow and the League of Assassins was very, very strange, but very, very well done. And of course, the casting on them. What's not to love about Liam Neeson, who, at the time of recording, has now officially confirmed that he's retired from action films. He thinks he's past it. I think,
do you know what? If it's the right part, I'd still give him it. I think what he's been done is he's basically been used over and over and over in the same role after doing Taken.
And then remaking Taken twice. I refuse to watch all the films
which are essentially taken on a plane or taken on a boat, or you know, essentially any different form of transportation that you can stick him with. I'm glad he's not quite gone snakes on a plane, but he was probably leaning in the realm of doing ridiculous action films. Taken with Wolves, he does a weird film where he's in.
Is that like a crossover with Dances with Wolves?
it's that lesser known crossover, yeah. Kevin Costner voices a wolf, and no, it's I don't know, it's a. I can't remember what it's called, but it's one of those films that's in the Arctic.
I'm thinking of the one on a plane where he played like an alcoholic air marshal.
Yeah. That was
terrible but brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. He basically does a lot of terrible but brilliant kind of action
and
films.
And he's the one that makes them brilliant as well.
He's the only one that makes them redeemable, but then he does things that surprise you. So I don't know if you've seen the Lego movie, the original one.
Yeah.
I know we're not going to talk Lego Batman because you were a little bit disappointed.
I was massively disappointed.
And we might fall out about that. Well, I still love Will Arnett. I think Will Arnett's Batman is just genius. But I do think I see what you mean. Although Michael Cera as well as Robin. Anyway, he voices the good cop, bad cop in the Lego Batman or the Lego film, Liam Neeson. And it's just like a stroke of absolute genius because he's just like perfect in this role. One minute he's doing his Taken voice and the next minute he's this very camp, Irish policeman. It's just bizarre. And I kind of like that about actors when they just, he probably did that and went, I've kind of had enough with the action movies. Do you know what I mean? It's like, this is quite fun because it's hard for actors. They do get typecast a lot and there are actors out there that just tend to avoid that. So, you know, Christian Bale in particular is kind of a method actor. He's really out there. He's not known to being the most sociable, likable man in Hollywood.
He's known for being an absolute arsehole.
Yeah, but he does things that push the boundaries. Do you know what I mean? So him and Nolan working together was just the perfect kind of timing for both of them. And you've got that with every other actor in this. I think we could talk about Rachel, Katie Holmes, as a maybe outlier in this, because
I really liked her. I'm not a big fan of Katie Holmes.
I liked her too. I just think maybe she's the one that, well, because she didn't come back for the sequel, you think she's the one that maybe didn't quite fit.
Yeah.
But then you don't like Maggie Gyllenhaal either. She's on your list.
No, I really don't like Maggie Gyllenhaal. She's just got one of those faces that just pisses me off. And I don't like her delivery. She always sounds really sarcastic, even when she's saying things.
Yeah.
She's just got a tone that sounds really sarky. And I'm like, no, you're talking to Batman. Don't be sarcastic or he'll put a batarang in your eye. Sadly, he didn't.
Ultimately she...
The joke's on her because she wasn't in the third one.
She certainly wasn't. But everyone else cast in this is just pitch perfect. I mean, I think we talked when we previously recorded this about Michael Caine for at least 10 minutes, which we might not do now. But his delivery, especially in the entire trilogy, is just... it's just incredible, man. I mean, it's emotion to the role. He is every inch the Alfred I kind of hoped we'd get. We can talk Gotham briefly if you want. What a weird telling of an Alfred.
Yeah,
Gotham.
Alfred is the elderly advisor who patches up Batman. He is not the ex-military badass who likes shooting people. Gotham have just got... I like Sean Pertwee.
I really like him. He's a really likable guy.
The way they've written Alfred and tried to make him into the badass is just baffling. I can't get on board with it one bit. And every time he's in a scene and he's doing anything other than, you know, fetching Master Bruce a fucking sandwich, I just want to punch him, which I won't do because he's always got a gun. What kind of butler has a gun? I mean, I know Gotham's depicted as being this... you know,
this Gotham, right? We talked about Gotham 1 and 2, and I've watched series 3 because it came onto Netflix, and it keeps me engrossed, and I don't know how. It's fucking mental. It's absolutely batshit crazy. It jumps around from one story to the next within minutes, and it's just so out there. But it's a major broadcasting show, and it's obviously popular. And there's elements I like about it, but you really want the real Gotham, do you know what I mean? The Gotham I wanted telling and the Alfred within that, it's the Batman trilogy by Nolan. That Gotham City is the one I dreamt of, do you know what I mean? It's the one that looks and feels real. It doesn't feel like it's out of a comic book. And the thing with is Batman and the comics is they're so dark and so edgy, and that's the image you get. It's almost that kind of, when we talked about Sin City a while back, you know, you really get that feel of what the city is like. Do you know what I mean? Because of how visually incredible it is. And that's obviously very heavy visuals. And it's the same with, you know, Hell's Kitchen when you're watching Daredevil and stuff. You get that impression. And Harlem in, you know, Luke Cage, you know, I like things that take me to a place and I have a sense of familiarity. And Gotham has that, obviously, connotations with big American cities, you know, Boston, New York, and the such. And you do feel like it's a city that is real, but then it's got that twist to it. It's got that edge to it. And I think briefly, before we go back to the characters, when we're talking about the scenes with Scarecrow and the big hallucinogenic and everything that went on there, that Gotham is incredible to me. You know what I mean? And the games have worked well with doing Arkham and doing Gotham. But when you see all those streets explosion, you know, and the smoke rising and just the fear inducing and all the hallucinogenic horses and all the scary stuff going on, that is something that I don't think other directors could produce. I think that's what sets it apart.
Easily the best depiction of Gotham.
Yeah.
I mean, in fairness, there wasn't a very high sort of meter for it anyway, because the other...
No, we did like Tim Burton's Gotham, though. You know what I mean? It's got that kind of edgy element to it that's quite... It has a bit of gravitas and a bit of drama and all that kind of stuff about it, but it doesn't...
Then we know what happened, don't we, where it went all fucking stupid and steampunk and just...
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it lost it a little bit.
And everything with neon and... Oh, my God.
Yeah, never use neon. It's not Blade Runner.
As soon
like
as
we
your
said,
idea
you know.
Of like street thugs is they're stood around with neon face paint riding really futuristic looking motorbikes that are covered in neon lights and paint, you've fucked up Gotham.
You've gone the wrong direction.
Scary, not hilarious.
Yeah.
So fuck them.
Exactly. But this is just, it's just bang on. Do you know what I mean?
It's being shot in IMAX. It just looks absolutely perfect.
Yeah, I said that before. I didn't see this in IMAX. I saw Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah,
and the Dark Knight Rises scene in Hong Kong is just one of the incredible scenes I've seen in IMAX before. Inception's up there as well. Obviously, Nolan, you know, being Nolan, Dunkirk's pretty high up there as well for me. But The Dark Knight, you know, and I'd imagine Batman Begins is the same. Yeah. It's those cityscapes, you know, and it's not just the cities. We talk about, you know, that incredible fight scene on the glacier, and that's real footage. Do you know what I mean? That's them on location in Iceland.
Two people were actually fighting on a glacier. And
I mean, how cool is that? It's just so... It's... You know,
it's the vastness, isn't it? You stood there and you're going, oh my God, they are literally in the middle of frozen nowhere.
Yeah.
The contrast between that and the high-rise buildings of Gotham is just brilliant. And especially when not long before and after then, they've been in this really built-up little sort of backwards town halfway up the mountain, and then there isn't another soul for miles around them. It's just... And that's one of the best scenes in it. The one thing I liked about it, I love the fact that you have the I don't know what they're called, the blades that he has on the gauntlets.
No, but they're
And you see the first time he uses them when he traps Ra's sword in between the blades, and I like the fact that you know that that's where that seed came from, and when he starts designing the costume, he thinks these might be handy, you know, if I ever need to block a sword or a bat or something like that. And it's just little bits that came in of the
there's a lot of connotations through the film. You know, if you watch this film and then kind of rewind it back or watch it again, you would watch, you'd see all those elements that join up so well. So his suit and how that came about, it's not just the suit that's been lying around. It's, you know, it's not just there out of, oh yeah, this will fit. It's all designed around what he's learned, you know, about his fighting style and how he needs to be flexible and durable. And obviously, the Batman element is not just about his physical strength or his ability to sneak up on people. It's his ability to get out of danger. You know, the cool thing in this, you know, with the signal of the bats, you know, when he signals all that noise and the bats come raining in, that's such a cool element on Arkham. I thought that was really, really cool.
That's one of the most pivotal scenes in Batman Year One.
Yeah.
The first time he does that, when he escapes, he's cornered by the GCPD in a building, and that's how he escapes. And they pretty much borrowed that scene. Not scene for scene, but they borrowed it. At least sort of half, two-thirds of that is borrowed from Year One. And it's become pretty much an iconic thing of Batman, is maybe not his use of bats, but like you said, the way he can transition from one place to another. He can't just go, oh shit, I need to get out of here. It's got to be done quietly and theatrically and...
Yeah, and if you've ever played any of the games, it's those kind of elements as well. Yeah, they're more stealth-based games, aren't they, than hand-to-hand.
Hugely stealth-based. You literally can't play the games at all if you haven't got some kind of a concept of, you know, Batman can't just run into a room and go, what's up, guys, I'm going to punch 14 of you in the face now. You need to pick people off quietly and get in their heads and freak them out.
Yeah, and it does do, you know, those games are directly inspired by this work. It's this style of Batman.
And there's one thing that the Nolan films don't get credit for. They gave Batman a resurgence, because it was the first Batman film in, what was it, 20 years?
No, it wasn't that long. It was only about 10, actually. It was only about 10, because Batman Forever came out.
Yeah, the last one was 97. So, yeah, I think you're talking about 8, 9, 10 years.
Yeah.
Which, for one of the most ever-present characters, you know, over like a 10-15 year period, that's,
and there'd been nothing else either, you know. No, we're not just talking like there's been TV or there's been this or that, it's been dead. Do you know what I mean? And yeah, and it's like it's almost like, and they can't leave it alone with Superman and Spider-Man obviously, but it's like Spider-Man ever disappearing for more than 5 years, it ain't gonna happen. You know what I mean? As much as it sometimes needs to, it, you know, you can't, these major characters not just sell films and get audiences, they sell everything else that comes along with it. Do you know what I mean? It's all related to comics. Oh, it's all related to
merchandise. More visible than Batman, you know. Yeah. You walk into most sort of high street fashion shops, you will find a Batman something, you know, t-shirts, pajamas, lunch boxes, all kinds.
Yeah, man. And that's all just intensified since these films. Be the same with comics as well, man. I mean, this would have turned a lot of people back onto comics.
Yeah.
It's
when I started getting that itch again. All those years ago, I started getting the itch because it really did get me into Batman. And it's got to the point now, Batman's now my favourite comic character, taken over from Green Lantern, because over the last year, I've read so much of it.
Yeah,
imagine the climate now. Imagine if there was nothing Batman related for 3 years. No Gotham, no films, no animated films. Bear in mind, they do a Batman animated.
Oh, they do a lot of very good animated films as well. Yeah,
12, 18 months. If there was,
I mean, animated film released at the cinema, for God's sake. I mean, Killing Joke was released at the cinema, which is kind of, you know, it was only momentarily, it was out on minimum release, but Jesus Christ, that's pretty huge for an animated film of this nature, you know what I mean, within a subcontext of Batman and stuff. Yeah. So you don't get that. I mean, I don't think people, the resurgence that this had on cinema as a whole is massive. Do you know what I mean? It's not just about comic book films. This has shaped what we watch today at the cinema. I mean, Nolan does that as a director. He's reintroduce modern sci-fi onto different realms and levels and action films than were there before. Just like, say, the Bourne trilogy has done it with, you know, revamping Bond into a modern style and Taken and all those films. You know, this Nolan trilogy is a big part of what we see in the cinemas today. And you get, you know, then it changes. You get people like James Gunn doing Guardians, and then everyone goes, ah, shit, that works. Do you know what I mean? Let's do films that are a little bit quirky and offbeat, and that kind of relaunches another side of things, and Deadpool will do the same. And it's all about evolution of cinema, but this is the film and the franchise that probably really kickstarted comic book cinema to where it is now, which is the biggest grossing films in cinema on a year-to-year basis, because you can talk Star Wars, obviously, and that's obviously another Disney franchise, but that's only one film a year.
Yeah,
exactly.
And MCU alone is three films a year. You throw one or two DCs a year in there as well.
And then all the TV and other elements that come along with it. Yeah. It's just huge.
And another thing it doesn't really get the credit for is the Nolan trilogy continued what the Bryan Singer X-Men films had done, and the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man films. They were the real sort of beginning of the sort of current comic book climate anyway. But as you said, they started it off, but then Nolan really,
he was the shot of adrenaline, you know.
He was the one that showed them that they can be not just good films but masterpieces, because I don't know many people who wouldn't say that The Dark Knight is one of their favourite films. And I know people who, you know, will just love a good rom-com you know, horror films, but would happily sit there and say, you know, Dark Knight was incredible, it was amazing, it had this, that and the other, it was brilliant. Oh, Heath Ledger was incredible. You know, but maybe...
Yeah, my wife really likes these films, and she wouldn't rush to see a lot of the other comic book films. They'd normally be just out of her realms of, you know, either too comic book based, too... She doesn't really do fantasy in those elements of things. So for me, that's a big sign that it's more appealing to people that like the darker kind of action film. Do you know what I mean? It's not your straight up. It's not your conventional film you'd expect from a comic book background, and that's what set it apart, really. And I mean, the characters were a big part of that, because we've mentioned Bale, we mentioned the villains, and we momentarily mentioned Kane, who's just supremely excellent in this. But then you've got Morgan Freeman, and then you've got Gary Oldman as well. I mean, Gary Oldman is the coup for these films. Yeah. I mean, the other actors were huge, and obviously Michael Caine has been around forever, but Oldman's something else for me. He's just... Well, he was just perfect.
We love Gary Oldman, and we love Liam Neeson, and we love Morgan Freeman, and everyone loves Michael Caine. So yeah. To get any one of those in would have been good, but to get all of them in and to get them depicted so well and written so well and so faithfully to how they should be. You know, people don't really understand how important Lucius Fox is before these films. Because it's often been a criticism of Batman as an unrealistic character. You know, well, how does he just know how to do all these things? Well, as you mentioned before, they explained everything away. Well, where did the bat suit come from? Well, it was, you know, experimental military tech. That's pretty realistic, because there will be companies around the world who have probably done along those lines of trying to make weaponry and suits for the military.
And it's all the stuff that links into Iron Man and everything else as well. Like advanced weaponry, you know, artificial intelligence, they'll get their hands on what they want to get their hands on. In realistic terms, there'll be suits, and there'll be those kind of, you know, those suits that give people more strength and more, you know, sort of sci-fi depicts it all the time. There are things like that in production. It's just so expensive that it's not viable half the time.
Look at the first example I can think of any suit like that, Alien.
Yeah.
You know, that was, if you want to sort of put everything down to its base level, that was along the same lines, because it turned Ripley into a fucking claw-laden killing.
Yeah, this Aliens, yeah, second one. It's I love that. I used to have a toy.
Oh, that's one of the most iconic scenes in film for me.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's up there with Bruce Willis in, you know, a dirty white vest.
It's true. It is true. That is one of my memories as a child. And I wasn't probably even old enough to watch Aliens. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
I don't
it's that,
think I'm old enough to watch Aliens now. It still freaks the shit out of me.
It's the first two. I watched Alien Covenant, and I realised it was a sequel to Prometheus after I'd got halfway into it, and I was utterly, utterly disappointed because I hated Prometheus. Yeah, I'm still fuming about it, actually. I've been in a real sci-fi mode at the minute. So, you know, Inception, I watched Fifth Element, which is a cool Bruce Willis film.
Fifth Element, 10 years.
Yeah, it's just, I love Chris Tucker as Ruby Rod, the radio host. I just can't get enough of that. Gary Oldman's a villain in that as well. It's cool. There's some really good sci-fi films and stuff, and I watched Alien Covenant, and I was bitterly, bitterly disappointed, because you've got a great cast and you've got Michael Fassbender, and it's just all this stuff, but it's a sequel of Prometheus, and Ridley Scott has completely lost it in this element. And I was chatting to someone online about it, and it feels a little bit George Lucas-esque, where he just lost control of Star Wars.
Yeah.
And it just feels like, I mean, Ridley's like 80, 81 now.
Really?
And it's like, yeah, he is in his 80s. I think Clint Eastwood's in his 80s as well. It's amazing.
My first thought about that is, has potentially someone just basically gone, well, this is going to make you $50 million personally or something?
I don't think so. I think he's rich enough, man. I think he's doing it for the love of what he wants to continue of his Aliens, you know, of his dream of what it should be. But they were talking about handing the reins over a little bit to Denis Villeneuve, who's doing Blade Runner. So that was not going to happen. And Ridley Scott originally did Blade Runner all those years back. Or it going to Neil Blomkamp, who did District 9 and Elysium and those kind of films, which would make sense because he loves Aliens and, you know, it's his kind of element of things. But, you know, you get these directors and it is easy to get wrong because they get things in their head and they just get a little bit stuck in the same ideas and the same motions. So when you get directors like Nolan who are happy to just change it up every time. Do you know? So he's obviously got that sci-fi roots in there. He's made Interstellar, he's made Inception, and then he's made action films in these, and then those kind of thrillers, Memento and stuff like that. And then he's gone off and made a World War II drama. And it's like, you know,
it's just
guy
clearly, he's picking him off, isn't he? He's got sci-fi,
he's picking him off.
Action, done. The next one is a rom-com. And you know he'll be in
like
it. Michael Caine will be in it.
Best rom-com ever made. Yeah.
Michael Caine and Cillian Murphy in some kind of strange father-son relationship.
That I could see. Again, I think you're onto one there. It sounds amazing. Sounds amazing. You're on fire at the minute. I think you need to get writing some of these scripts down.
I'm writing down right now.
But, I mean, it's great when you get directors that really care about the subject matter, and I think you can see that here, that this film is made by a man who cares about Batman. Do you know what I mean? He cares about the character development, he cares about the whole trilogy and where he's going to take the character, because all of this is an origin story with a view of making a trilogy. And I think it's rare, because often nowadays you get people like Zack Snyder who know he's going to make one film, and then halfway through making that, he might sign on for another. But I think Warner Brothers fully trusted Nolan in the sense that,
oh yeah,
you know, you're going to make an incredible trilogy, and we're going to back you all the way. And it does make such a difference.
Well, he must have trusted them to say, right, you're not going to all of a sudden in 12 months turn around and say, right, well, we need to take such and such, you know, the writer that you wanted, well, you know, we don't want them or whatever. And that was
you've got to trust.
Such, imagine how different it would have been if they'd got halfway through doing, you know, Batman Begins, and then there was some kind of a problem that threatened the Dark Knight. It would have completely, it would have, on its own, it's a good film, but what makes it a great film is the groundwork that it does for the two films that come after it.
Yeah. And that's another topic in terms of debate. It's everyone going, well, when's the sequel ever been better than the original? And everyone will go,
Dark Knight,
or they'll go Empire Strikes Back.
Obviously.
And some might argue Back to the Future 2, that's wrong. There's a few...
Those people belong in homes.
Indiana Jones, I would imagine, is second one, Temple of Doom, which is the worst of the three, I think. Just that screaming woman throughout the whole bloody film. There's not many occasions, let's be honest. Aliens, some might argue over Alien. It's a bold assumption for me, but there's a lot of films that just don't progress. Do you know what I mean? So the original film is the groundwork, but it's also the one that has the best writing, it has the best use of the actors, it, you know, gets the most out of the actors. Whereas this is a trilogy that really is always bound to be a trilogy, you know, and it's always developed in that way, and you're getting more out of the characters in each. You know, because Christian Bale's Batman develops, Michael Caine's Alfred just gets incredible, particularly in the third film, actually. I think he's the strongest part of it. And it's the same with Gary Oldman. I don't think Freeman
Gary Oldman, across the three, I was just about to say when you were saying he gets better. Oldman, for me, just, he's good in one, he's great in two, and he's just outstanding.
He's just carrying that weight. In the third film,
a nice,
you know,
progression, because from to go back to the animated films from Batman Year One, you see Commissioner Gordon when he's Lieutenant Gordon, and that's what I really like in the films, the fact you actually see Gordon get his just desserts, he gets his rewards for all the incredible work that he does, but he in turn is cultivating that relationship with Batman. And he knows he's getting where he's getting because of his partnership with Batman, but he doesn't forget that. You know, he's not turning his back on him and trying to be all big.
No.
And he's brilliant. He's absolutely genius piece of casting.
Yeah, he is a genius piece of casting. And I think he develops with the film. And I think you can see that a director like Nolan, the longer he works for people and the more he works for people, and you've seen it when he recasts Michael Caine in every film and Cillian Murphy in many films and stuff, you can see that he just has that connection with actors, and I think he gets the most out of them.
You know how to get out of them, don't you? It's similar with a lot of music.
It's that respect thing again.
If say you look at you know, you might do one album with a producer and you get on really well with them, and they get you to go to a place where you're writing your best lyrics or whatever, or you're performing so much better. When you need to record another album, you're going to go, well, do you remember What's-His-Face? He worked really well. Like Rick Rubin is one of them. A lot of bands go back to Rick Rubin. And the drummer from Bloody Garbage that worked with Nirvana, Butch Vig, he's known for being really good at drawing that out of people. And, you know, I don't know how many films they've done together, but if you've done more than maybe two or three films with someone, you know, the director is clearly getting the best out of the actor, and the actor is clearly giving their best for the director. So why would you not want to keep that going? You know, because it's going to make your job easier, isn't it? If you've got a cast that you know you can trust, then that's one less thing for you to worry about. And again, that goes to the continuity. A lot of the same cast came back from film to film, so they already know, well, we know Lucius Fox is taken care of. We've got Gordon sorted. We've got Bruce sorted. We've got this, that, and the other. So then you're just thinking about, you know, filling gaps, right? Well, we need to think about the villain. We've had to recast Rachel Dawes because of whatever reason. I think it was Scientology related. She probably had to go and be rebrainwashed or something because she started snapping out of it. But yeah, it must be nice from a director's point of view to just not have to worry about everything coming together at once.
Yeah, exactly. I think fundamentally what we take from this film is, obviously, we talked all about the action, all about the actors, and all about the delivery, but ultimately it's the script.
Yeah,
because the script. This film is pitch perfect on all levels with the script. We talked before about how it has that continuity in it, but that wouldn't happen without the quality of the script, you know, because the script does, it tells that origin story so successfully in the first kind of hour or so in the film that everything that follows that is just all related back to what happened. You know, you've got Batman stealing, or, you know, you've got Bruce stealing on the streets, and that's something you would never see. Do you know what I mean? Like, or even think in your head. And they bring that back around because it's all about him not just being this spoiled rich kid, you know, and that's what the TV series doesn't get right on Gotham. You know, it doesn't get that balance right. And that's what a lot of things have failed to do with Bruce in particular. They don't get that emotion out of him. They get the anguish and the anger from what happened to his parents, but they don't get any of the development aspects of things. They don't get where his personality came from, or where his fighting traits came from, or where, you know, he really has those motives. The motives are deeper here than I've seen in any other Batman telling, and it really is just all about how well the narrative is and the script is. And I just think that's what just laid the groundwork for the whole thing. It's just incredible vision from a director that knew exactly what he wanted and basically got the best out of everyone involved in the process.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, as I'm sure you could pretty much work out by now, we are, you know, mild fans of this. We could
just mild.
We could easily do, you know, a 2 or 3 hour bumper. I would love to be able to do like a panel, you know, get 5 or 6 people on and jump the Nolan trilogy in its entirety, because you cannot underestimate the impact that this film has had on comic films in general. Probably on action films in general. There's one thing that we didn't mention. Nolan was, from my recollection, was the first director to really truly embrace IMAX. And
He was the one to embrace the right kind of technology in cinema.
There was three IMAX cameras in the world, weren't there? On Dark Knight or Dark Knight Rises, he had two of them. So that goes to show, you know, some little level of how much, you know, he's willing to do to get his vision across. IMAX was still a bit of a gimmicky thing, I think it would be fair to say. And he took it and made it a bit more mainstream. And now, how many films do you see listings for where they have a 2D, a 3D, and an IMAX? Pretty much every superhero film that's been out since then has an IMAX showing. And that's got to be largely, you know, down to his vision of saying, well, the only way I can show you how big Gotham is, Hong Kong is to take it out and give you all that extra screen. And that's what everyone else does now when they're showing off New York in the Avengers. Let's make it IMAX. If they need to show you something in England or, you know, somewhere else, put it in IMAX. Really get the, you know, the scale.
You know what I love about what he does with IMAX as well is it's not a gimmick in any way, shape, or form.
No, it's it's the vision.
It's 2D IMAX as well. So there's a big difference for me that I've really started, I usually watch films in 3D. When they're superhero films. So I watched, I think Doctor Strange, I watched in 2D, which is the first in a while. But most of the other films I've seen in 3D at the IMAX. And often it's a bit too much of a hit on your senses because you don't often take the whole film in. It's a great fun experience, don't get me wrong. But I think 2D IMAX, which Nolan is the master of, is just something else because that's about the scale. Do you know what I mean? It's about... You know, Dunkirk, the seats were reverberating with the noise.
I remember you saying about the, especially during the flights.
Yeah, it's all about the Spitfire scenes, which have got Tom Hardy as a pilot in that, which is, again, it's Nolan element to things. And it's all about the sound and the visuals and everything combined. It's a proper cinema going experience. There's certain films you regret not seeing at the cinema, which does happen from time to time. And I'm not a massive Interstellar fan. People adore that film from Nolan. I do need to rewatch it, but I think because I hadn't seen it at the cinema or seen it at the IMAX, I probably didn't get that visual hit that you really need from certain films. I think Dunkirk's probably 50% less viewing if you don't see it at the cinema, and maybe even less percentage if you don't see it in an IMAX, because it's all about that visual and all about that sound. And that's what Nolan does. He is giving you a proper cinema experience. And that's why it's worth, you know, paying that bit extra if you can, or traveling that bit further, or making that effort, because you're getting something pretty special. And you'll see so many films where you just get a 6 out of 10, a 7 out of 10. And that's great, but it's so good when you go and see a 9 or a 10. Do you know what I mean? You feel like you're getting something special.
I feel like you're getting your money's worth out of it.
Well, you do, and that's the whole point. And I mean, you're a guy that goes to the cinema 2 or 3 times, which is a lot for one film.
If I can, my preferred way to do it is within the first week of it coming out, IMAX, go to the gallery in the Printworks in Manchester. Then the second time, if it's something that needs to be watched in 3D, then maybe go and watch it in 3D. I don't really like 3D IMAX. I prefer to do IMAX and then 3D.
I think I've gone that way now, because the only film, I've talked about this film far too often, but Mad Max 3D IMAX was incredible, but they got the balance right. And I think,
which is hard,
Avengers Age of Ultron, it's too much 3D IMAX for me. It was way, way too much. It just, that scene in Sokovia at the end was just ridiculous. And you just couldn't follow.
So frantic, because there's bodies coming from everywhere.
You just couldn't follow it, and it just became a little bit too much. Just too much. And I think, like I said, the balance that Nolan gets on his films is unlike any other director, I'd say. He just has that perfect understanding of what makes a film tick, and that's why everyone adores him so much, you know. And I think something we haven't touched on, but we must, is just the score, because Hans Zimmer does this incredible score in all these films, and I think he works on every single Nolan film, because I know he's worked on
Inception. He's very good at creating the tension, isn't he?
It just creates
very, very good, and sets the mood.
If you hear those strings, or you hear that reverberation and noise, which you get in Inception and you get in certain Dark Knight and stuff, you know, it just takes you straight there. You know, it's quite rare that they do that. And it's that building, you know, tension of music. And I love it. It sets the pace. It sets the drama. I've got a couple of the soundtracks, and they're not, you know, you wouldn't normally think the standalone listens for score of that kind of, it's not your big grand things, or it's not your Tarantino soundtracks or whatever, but they just sound incredible. It does sound amazing, and it really does set the feelings and the tone of a Nolan film. And I don't think like I said, the sound is everything with that. And you're talking about effects, sounds are incredible in these films as well. Sound effects and technicals, all the technical elements of these films are just flawless. But the soundtrack and the kick it has, it's just quite a big thing for me as well.
Yeah.
Are we happy? I think we're
very
happy.
Very, because yeah. So far it doesn't look like the call recorder's fucked up, so I'm absolutely over the moon.
So am I, because we've recorded two, in my opinion, good pods, and it'd be a bloody big shame to not let these be listened to occasionally. We'd love feedback on this, because, like I said, we love this film. We really hope everyone else does. We know a lot of people that we respect hold this film in really high regard. I just think any feedback, anything else you want us to discuss, it's good for us, because we really do. I think this is what shows off our mutual love of comic book and cinema, really.
You know what I would really like? It'd be really good if there's people who listen to this who go, bloody hell, I haven't watched Batman Begins for a few years.
Yeah, and then
go
I want back. People to watch it.
Because when I watched it a few weeks ago in the build-up to recording this, and I enjoyed it more than I have done at any other time in the past, and I've always enjoyed watching it, because every time I watch it, I appreciate it a little bit more for all the extra things that it does. And hopefully, you know, a few people that are listening might get the same sort of kick out.
Yeah, it's overshadowed by its sequel, and it doesn't deserve to be. That's my truest statement, really. I think it deserves to get the praise for it being such a good standalone film. I think it holds its own. Yeah, I genuinely do. And I think there's some scenes in it and the way it's shot, and that I love the first hour. I absolutely adore it. And we didn't even talk about Tom Wilkinson as Falcone, and there's some great other cameos and other appearances in this film. I don't think anyone is badly cast. I think it's really well put together. Hope everyone goes and revisits. We will be back quite soon. I did briefly mention next one's going to be
Ragnarok, isn't it? We'll have to do
preview Ragnarok, because that's coming up soon. We're very, very excited about that. I think it'll be an incredible film.
We need to find a Thor person.
Yeah, we do. I'm going to learn to pronounce the director's name in this time for the next two weeks before we record,
because I'm pretty sure if I try, I will offend someone.
You will probably say something offensive in Maori and just piss off.
And there's much more easy ways for me to offend people. I don't need to try and pronounce people's names that are difficult. I could just say something really horrible, and I could offend a whole continent if I wanted to, but I'm trying not to.
Yeah, please don't. It would be quite damaging to us if we offend any more people.
Yeah.
I think it's got to the point we've offended a lot. So.
And what I'll do is, as well, I'll speak to my co-nerd, Joey, and see if he wants us to do a Thor character profile pod. Because we said we're going to try doing them, but I've got absolutely no frame of reference for Thor books.
Yeah, haven't had any comic book reading of Thor. I think it's great, and I think the way they depict it is amazing, but I just haven't had any kind of exposure. So yeah, I will be a little bit, maybe we can combine the two. We'll see what goes on.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. That's that. Yeah, I am on a Blade Runner podcast for the original, and I'm hoping everyone will go and see the sequel. It's as good as we hope it's going to be. Listen to that. And then, I've not done much about football. No one wants to talk about football here, do we? We're past that at the minute.
Oh, fuck football.
It's all about games. And
it's all about Batman and video games.
Yeah, exactly. So, take it easy, guys. We and girls, if there are any. There are. We have some nice, faithful females who I want to get on the podcast as well. And they can be outpaid from us. It's not going to be hard, is it?
No.
It's not going to be hard. That'd be cool as well. So thanks very much, guys, for tuning in. We will catch up with you in the next couple of weeks.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.